Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Vice Principal Peterson, and it's my great pleasure on behalf of the McGill University community to invite you to this special lecture by Dr. Ved Mehta. This lecture is one of the lectures in the Beattie series. Sir Edward Beattie was a longtime chancellor of McGill University, and these lectures have been available to the public for about 25 years now. They were given to McGill University by his brother, Dr. Beattie of Toronto. And the purpose of the Beattie lectures was to bring in prominent speakers from abroad. These speakers not only benefit the audiences that we bring, such as tonight, but we take full advantage of the people who come and work them very hard. And we've worked Dr. Mehta very hard today, having had him at the Department of English, the Department of Religious Studies, and the Center for Developing Area Studies. So what you see and what you hear tonight is really only the tip of the iceberg. As I say, the Beattie gift in memory of one of our great chancellors has been a wonderful gift to us all, the Montreal community, but McGill as well. Dr. Mehta is going to speak tonight on the topic of Mahatma Gandhi and democracy in a poor country. Dr. Mehta is staff writer at the New Yorker, although we have some discussion about whether he is a staff writer or a freelance writer. In any case, he's been writing for the New Yorker and has an office in their building, and he's been writing for them since 1961. He was born in Lahore in 1934, but has since become a naturalized U.S. citizen. At the age of 15, he left India to come to the United States for an education and attended the Arkansas School for the Blind. Following that, he went to California, where he earned a Bachelor of Arts degree from Pomona College, and then to Oxford, where he earned a BA Honors in Modern History in 1959. He spent a couple of years at Harvard University until 1961, when he left to become a writer for The New Yorker. Dr. Mehta has many, many academic honors, and I have a list of them here, but I think I'll not bother reading them to you. I think his own presentation will be more impressive to you than my reading a list of his honors. His books, and you may know some of them, are extremely varied in their interests and in the areas they cover. Beginning with Face to Face in 1958, which was dramatized on the BBC and received prestigious awards, Dr. Mehta has written Walking the Indian Streets, The New Theologian, Portrait of India, Mahatma Gandhi and His Apostles, and many others. And he has written articles at an almost ferocious rate of productivity, and these have appeared not only in the United States, but in other countries of the world as well. I was interested about how he is so productive, and I asked him, we had the pleasure of having dinner with him tonight, and I asked him how he does it, and the answer is simple. I should have known it. It's just plain hard work, I guess. 10 hours a day of writing. I also asked him if he enjoyed it, and he said, well, I guess I must somewhere down deep because I keep doing it, but I guess it is a great deal of hard work. We were just before as people were arriving, we were sitting chatting, and I, being curious about education, wanted to know about the differences between his experiences at Oxford and his experiences at Harvard. And the pattern at Oxford, of course, is not many courses, and the pattern at Harvard is many courses. And I asked him about the relationship between his studies and the titles of his books, and Dr. Mehta has said, and I'm quoting him, I don't think I've ever taken a single course in any subject I've ever written on. Now, you can imagine that's a little upsetting for somebody who makes his living organizing courses and trying to arrange things to help people to learn. I guess some people learn no matter what you do to them. And I think Dr. Mehta is one such. It's my very great pleasure to introduce him to you. Dr. Mehta.
Dr. Peterson, thank you very much for your introduction. It's one of the hazards of being a writer, and lecturing that even the most casual conversation is endowed with a special meaning. I had no idea that I was on the mat when I was talking to Professor Peterson there. I must say, had I realized that he was going to quote me about courses, I would have thought it was a very inappropriate thing to say at a university that you don't have to take courses, and it might be interpreted as a way of advocating leaving the university. Quite the contrary, I spent 9 years at universities. It just so happens that my interests have diverted from the subjects I originally studied. By the way, years ago I took a course in public speaking, and I was told never to start a speech by apologizing. That always put the audience on edge. But I'm going to break that rule because I'm not used to public speaking very much, and I've clocked in a few hours talking, and you might have heard my voice, some of you anyway, in different classrooms. So if suddenly I become quiet for a minute, it's not that I've gone into a trance. It probably means that I'm resting my voice. So don't get too nervous. Now, I want to begin with just a slight autobiographical note, which is that for the last 30 years, which is two-thirds of my life, I have lived in the West. And yet, quite a substantial portion of my writing has been, in one way or another, about India. And reason for that is known to many of you who've read people much better than in literature than I am. There is such a thing as a lost country, and we meet it in Joyce, and we meet it in Shaw, and in Beckett. So some of the things I say are said from both an involvement and distance. But the fact is that 1/6 of the human race lives in India, 1/6. In fact, since independence in 1947, the population in India has doubled. And it's now projected that by year 2000, it may double again. There's a terrific pressure on the land. The trees are being demolished regularly, which makes land much more subject to erosion, and there are terrible floods. At the moment, India is going through perhaps the greatest drought of the century. And I don't think that in history there's ever been a country with as many poor people as India has. And funnily enough, I realize this every time I publish a book. This is just a personal note, because people have a certain amount of resistance to reading about India, as I can testify from the sales of my books. And the reason is very simple, that if you, what people expect to read when they read about India is just more about poverty, one horrific image of poverty after another. Who wants to know it? But my feeling is that although I'm settled in a rich country, and most of you here live in a rich country, the truth of the matter is that there are about 100 poor countries, and these countries are producing at a terrific rate. And we are living, in a sense, on borrowed time. We already have that experience with the oil, but the thing is that our future, I think, we are mortgaging our future to these poor countries. Sooner or later, all our standards of living are going to be diminished, because we live in one planet, we are united in common destiny here, and we have limited resources. So I point this out to you to simply underscore why I think that interest in India is not misplaced. And for the purposes of this talk, I will use India as a paradigm of a poor country. By that I mean, whatever problems poor countries around the world have, India exemplifies them. We also exemplify it another way, that perhaps the greatest leader who was concerned with the poor in modern times came from India. We know about Jesus and Francis of Assisi and Socrates and Buddha, but in modern times, I don't think there is anybody who instinctively understood the problems of the poor countries and poor people all over the world than did Mahatma Gandhi. And I am now going to sketch out for you several solutions which have been offered, or they're not solutions, they're really proposals for forms of government for poor country. And among them, since I'm talking about India, I'm going to talk about Gandhiism, Nehruism, Mrs. Gandhi's solution, Marxism, dictatorship, and economic development. Because these all, in one way or another, have been proposed as a way of dealing with the poverty, the sea of poverty that threatens, in my opinion, to engulf us. So what light can Gandhi throw on this? As I was coming in, somebody was picketing outside, and he said, we are against Gandhi because he has duped the poor. I'm not here to propose Gandhi's solution to India's problems, quite the contrary. But I think he did think about the problems of the poor, and that's the reason for my interest in Gandhi. I spent 5 years writing a book about him, and the reason for my bringing him up today. Gandhi essentially was a man of God. His life is meaningless unless it's seen as a search for God or a search to realize the God within. So his answers were very much religious answers to the problems that we face. He was otherworldly in his attitudes, in his diet, in his habits, and the way he lived. And his favorite book was Bhagavad Gita, which is a poem from the collection of epic called Mahabharata. And for 50 years, there was hardly a day when he didn't read and reread the Gita. And there was cycles of readings. Every week or so, the entire book was reread. And if you study the Gita, as I have over the years, it seems to me that the basic message of the Gita is that we this world is a temporary place. It's a temporary station. That we are here for one moment. And it's only one incarnation out of many. It's a suit of clothes. And the main function of life is to act and to do your caste duty. Now, I'm aware that the surface structure of the poem, as some of you may know, is really a war. Arjun is being asked, is debating with Krishna, whether he should fight or not in this war.